Time once again now to enter the Century Ireland time machine and travel back to our Radio Éire newsroom in 1914 for a summary of the news read now by Anne Doyle.
And now for the news from September 1914. John Redmond, the leader of the Irish Parliamentary Party, has called on members of the Irish Volunteers to join the British Army. In a speech to members of the East Wicklow Volunteers in Wooden Bridge, he called on the men to go wherever the firing line extends in defence of right, of freedom and religion in this war. The speech has drawn a furious reaction from elements within the Irish volunteer movement. The founder of the Irish Volunteers, Professor Owen McNeill, has accused Mr. Redmond of being fundamentally at variance with the movement's published and accepted aims and pledges. This surfacing of tensions within the Irish Volunteers comes days after the Home Rule for Ireland Bill received royal assent. However, the passing of a suspensory Home Rule Act will mean that the entire operation of the Government of Ireland Act will be suspended for the duration of the war. In war news, the government of France has fled Paris as the German army moves closer to the capital. The city of Paris is preparing for a siege. Guns have been mounted on the old walls and on the roofs of houses, with preparations also being made for street fighting. And finally, to sport. In the first Dublin derby of the season, the professionals of Shelburne have defeated the amateur Bohemians at Dalymount Park. Although the game was competitive throughout, Shelburne ran out comfortable winners on a 3-0 scoreline.
Anne Doyle there with news from September 1914. Joining me now, Mark Duncan of Century Ireland and Dr. Mary McAuliffe of the Women's Studies Department in University College Dublin. Mark, we heard there in that bulletin about the passing of the Home Rule Bill in September 1914, the anniversary, of course, last week on the 18th of September. There was another piece of legislation that went with it, which kind of took a lot of the good out of it.
Absolutely. That was the Suspensory Act. So while they do achieve Home Rule, it is effectively suspended for the duration of the war. So what John Redmond achieves is something that every nationalist leader has been trying to achieve for 30, 40 years in advance. Home Rule for Ireland. It becomes law, but he has nothing to show for it. There is no parliament in Dublin. There are no powers devolving into his hands. There is no patronage. There is no offices to fill. You know, it is very much a Pyrrhic victory.
And then shortly after that, he's going home down to down through Wicklow, and he comes to Wooden Bridge, and he made a speech, an impromptu speech, because apparently he began with the words, "I have no intention of making a speech," and here's some of what followed.
"And I say to you, go on drilling and make yourselves efficient at the work, and then account yourselves as men, not only in Ireland itself, but wherever the fighting line extends, in defence of right, of freedom and religion in this war."
And that was prepared by our colleagues on the This Week programme yesterday. Mark, put it all in context, please.
Well, you have to remember that John Redmond had, on the eve of the outbreak of war, basically given his support to the British war effort. He had said in the House of Commons that Britain could withdraw all of their troops from Ireland, and 40,000 of them are removed from Ireland in August 1914. He said they could remove all their troops from Ireland and that the Irish Volunteers would defend the shores of Ireland. In the days and weeks after that, he's putting pressure on Lloyd George and on Henry Asquith and Herbert Asquith to say, I've gone and taken a risk here. Don't leave me hanging. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to secure for the Empire the support of the Irish people. He's basically calling on them to deliver on Home Rule. And that's what they do on the 18th of September. You know, as I said, they introduce Home Rule. He has something to show for it. As I said, no powers devolve, but at least it's on the statute books.
And Mary McAuliffe, as Anne Doyle reminded us there in that brief bulletin, it didn't go down too well with a lot of people.
No, absolutely not. As Mark said, when Home Rule was introduced, nothing actually happens. There's no powers devolving to Dublin. But also at this stage, you have the Irish Volunteers. And when he calls for the men to fight wherever the line may extend, it causes a split within the Volunteers. And of course, Redmond is on the executive of the Volunteers. So McNeill then and others remove him from that position. And you get the split, not just in the Volunteers, but also in the female nationalist movement, the Cumann na mBan.
Yes, tell me a little more about that, please, Mary.
Well, Cumann na mBan, of course, had set themselves up as auxiliaries or allies of the Irish Volunteers. But you have a more radical militant rump within the Cumann na mBan organisation. And they, after a few weeks after the Wooden Bridge speech, issue a statement saying that they did not set themselves up to support men who would go off fighting on the in the trenches. Rather, they wanted to support men who would fight for Ireland and Irish freedom.
And that's a debate, I think, that goes on to this day. John A. Murphy, Emeritus Professor of Irish History in University College Cork, has a letter about it in the Irish Times today, taking issue with John Bruton. And John Bruton, in fact, was on the programme last month talking about that. And let's just hear some of his argument that there should be a proper commemoration of that of Redmond's contribution and that speech in Wooden Bridge.
I think it's important that we commemorate in September, that is next month, the 100th anniversary of the passage into law of the Home Rule Bill, an achievement of the Irish Parliamentary Party, something that Parnell didn't achieve, something that Butt didn't achieve, something that O'Connell didn't achieve, John Redmond and John Dillon did achieve. And it happened 100 years ago. And I think it's very important that we celebrate and commemorate this achievement of parliamentary, peaceful, non-violent politics.
And John Bruton, they're arguing effectively that 1916 was a mistake. Now, that's something that will engage historians, perhaps not just for a century, but maybe for a millennium to come. But I noticed John A. Murphy making the point in his letter to the Irish Times today, saying that even if the 1914 Act, which we've been referring to, had been implemented with some form of partition, it would have delivered no more than a mild measure of local government of the kind later provided by the Government of Ireland Act 1920. The truth is that the Imperial Government was determined to preserve the integrity of the United Kingdom at all costs. And he says the 1921 settlement, whatever its limitations, provided the essence of independence and constituted a chalk and cheese difference from 1914 Home Rule. Discuss.
Well, where to begin and all that. I suppose, you know, the one thing you have to say about the Home Rule Act, it has been commemorated. There's been huge debate over it in the last number of weeks. And that's largely partly due to the fact that it is overlapped with the referendum on Scottish independence. So these parallels have been drawn between Ireland and Scotland. Most of them are completely misplaced. You cannot compare the context in which the Scottish referendum has taken place on that, which and the introduction of Home Rule in 1914. For a start, the backdrop here is war. For a start, you have to acknowledge that the reason Home Rule is centre place in British political life is not because Britain choose to make it available to Irish people to vote on it. It's because the Irish question is based basically the cleavage in British parliamentary politics up to that point. What happens during the war is that effectively ends. And what John Redmond has done, and yes, we should definitely commemorate it, but he's basically sidelined the Irish Parliamentary Party by giving this kind of commitment to the British war effort. Because, as I said, he has nothing to show for it, but the Home Rule question has now been actually shelved for the duration of the war. And the whole dynamic in British party politics changes during this time. The move is towards bipartisanship. And by the summer of 1915, there's the first coalition government, of which he is not a part of it. So he's weakened as a result of this decision.
Did he make himself irrelevant then, Mary?
I think probably not deliberately, but certainly by removing himself and the party to the edges, really, of British politics. It's certainly irrelevant in terms of what's going on in Westminster. And by, I think, making the Wooden Bridge speech, he's beginning to become more irrelevant about what's happening in Ireland after the end of 1914. Because, of course, we already have other elements at play with the IRB and the IRB beginning to take over more of the organisations like the Gaelic League and the planning for militant action.
And what about John A. Murphy's contention that you're talking about chalk and cheese as between what was on offer in the 1914 Home Rule Act and what was achieved in the 1921 settlement?
I think what was on offer, he does talk about it being probably much more like local government and what was achieved then. Of course, what wasn't dealt with in 1914 is the fact that it was suspended almost immediately. So the Ulster question is still left unanswered, and that's going to have to be dealt with. Perhaps if Home Rule had been introduced in 1914, we would have had a violent reaction anyway. So in 1921, what you get is something that does bring in the border and separates the six counties off. But you also get much more of the type of government that has more powers in Dublin, obviously. So it is chalk and cheese, really. At that
and just on the commemoration of it, okay, it's obviously been noted. There's been, I think there was an event down in Wooden Bridge last week. In fact, John Bruton, I think, was along there. Billy Timmins was one of the key organisers, along with others in that. But was there, and has there been even almost up to recent times, Mark, a kind of an official reluctance to acknowledge Redmond's contribution?
I'm not so sure about that. I think a lot of historians have kind of written about his involvement. I think anybody who's any kind of school child who's kind of grown up in Ireland is aware of John Redmond, is aware of his influence on the Irish Parliamentary Party in reuniting it post the Parnell split. I suppose, obviously, the whole kind of dynamic changes post 1916 and we tend to look at it through that lens. But I don't think he's actually been sidelined. It is kind of extraordinary, though, that there is no memorial to him, painting, bust or whatever it is in
there was
in
a stamp and his granddaughter, I think, was on the This Week programme. I just got a snatch of it, saying that when she was studying history in Trinity in the 1970s, she didn't feel comfortable about identifying herself of somebody as somebody with that lineage, whereas now much more prepared to do that.
Well, I think particularly in Irish history, there were lines that look at constitutional nationalism and then the militant nationalism. And you might have historians who perhaps felt that constitutional nationalism ended in failure, really, and maybe read it that way. I think certainly in the last, since the 1980s and certainly in the last 20 years, there's more been more of a revaluation of O'Connell, Parnell, Redmond and those constitutionalist nationalists and what they did contribute to the argument and to the discussions and to the history.
OK, we'll leave it there. Thank you both for joining us. That's Dr. Mary McAuliffe of the Women's Studies Department at University College Dublin and Mark Duncan, of the History Ireland Project.